Bernard and Pepper Adams and the Pepper Adams Quintet with Kudos. And it is a tribute to a very famous jazz joint where Herbie Hancock, who is on piano in this tune, got his start as a teenager. That's an interesting thing. A lot of people, I had a friend talk to me about how certain people, you know, they seem to be born with these kinds of talents. And I said, oh, really? And the subject was of Al Sharpton was raised. I said, you really think Al Sharpton was born with this gift of preaching? You think Martin Luther King was born with the gift of preaching? No, we do that because we don't give or want to give people credit for working like a team of horses to develop their talents and skills. For example, with Al Sharpton, I pointed out to him, Al Sharpton was preaching since the age of 4 and was touring with the great Mahalia Jackson. All those years he put in. Yeah, this was not something that he just, you know, woke up one morning and he was a preacher. We tend to do that. We tend to overlook the kind of work that people put into developing their talents and skills. And I said that in reference specifically to Herbie Hancock, who was a teenager and performing at Kuro's, as was Lehman Jackson on bass and Jimmy Cobb on drums. This tune is part of the Pepper Jackson Quintet's 2000 album, Out of This World. So keep that in mind when people start saying, oh, they have a natural talent. You really think so, huh? So all the years, all the sleepless nights that they were practicing and trying to perfect their art, it really boils down to, well, they were born with it. No, they're not born with it. They developed it. And they deserve a great deal of credit, and we need to respect the investment that they have made. Lots of people fall into this category over the years to develop that talent. Well, we learned that there is round 2 of the case concerning George Floyd, the killing of George Floyd. And round 2 is going to be the trial of 4 cops, well, ex-cops. According to a federal indictment, they are going to have to answer to failing to render aid to a clearly distressed George Floyd, who by then had encountered Derek Chauvin, the merciless police officer who put his knee onto his neck and cut off circulation, cut off blood supply, cut off oxygen to his brain, resulting in George Floyd's death. 3 officers, former officers, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to mention that they were all fired after this incident. Do Dao had to show off a little bit of my Hmong there, prevented bystanders from interfering, that is to say, he prevented them from interceding in trying to get help for George Floyd based on what he saw. 34 years old, and he had 6 prior complaints by that time of use of force on his record. He was able to make $1 million bail. Then we have Quang. Where did I put him? Oh, J. Alexander Quang and Thomas Lane, also facing charges of assisting Chauvin in his murderous attack upon George Floyd and in restraining, quote unquote, him. So they too are charged under the federal indictment. And we have the final one. I did not name him yet. I'm looking through my notes here. No, so that's 3. That's correct. That would be 3. And they come up for trial in August. We will have the second part of this case play out then, but in court, that is. It's a very serious case, as you know. It resulted in the conviction of Derek Chauvin on second degree murder, manslaughter, and third degree murder charges. And he is hoping, and his lawyer has filed papers seeking a retrial, saying that the trial that he had was unfair. And so they're looking for a retrial. But what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to ask you a question. You know, I like to ask questions to see what answers are out there, because people see things in different light, you see? They see things in a different way. Assuming that these charges, these new charges, will stick, and that all 4 of these officers, ex-officers, I keep saying officers, ex-officers, are found guilty of the charges, the federal charges, in this federal trial, will that finally close the case? What are you thinking about that question? Assuming that they prevail and that none of the charges stick, or assuming that all of these charges stick, what would you say, would that have ended this whole macabre business? Is the number to call. Let me just go over again what the federal charges are. Let's see. My notes are all over the place, on my computer, on my phone, in my notebooks. Okay. Let's see. All right. So I have the question. Assuming that these new charges stick, and that all 4 of these ex-officers, Derek Chauvin, Doh Tao, Alexander Zhang, and Thomas Lane are found guilty of aiding and abetting the violent, fatal arrest of George Floyd and failing to render medical aid, will that finally close the case? 888-874-4888. What to your satisfaction, or what to your mind says there's something missing here so far? And of course, we know it's only the second installment of this case. But just the same, what is missing so far? Ed from Queens, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you?
Okay. Thanks.
What is missing, or what I would see is to close the book on this, and as far as reparative justice, the whole department needs to be indicted. I mean, how are these individuals with prior abuse records allowed to continue to be police officers for as long as they were allowed to be? And how are they allowed to group themselves together to form some type of star chamber or some type of force inside the force? You know, they all conspired to kill this man. And upon further investigation, they all have had prior records of abuse, and they all have participated in one form or another in violations of actual police work. So how are they allowed to manifest so long on the force? How deep does it go? Are there other individuals involved in this cabal? Is this something that is common practice of the force? The whole department needs to be indicted, needs to be taken apart and restructured.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program today.
Sorry about that.
That pretty much does it, because you've answered the question. Why is it important to go beyond this trial coming up in August of these four cops, ex-cops?
Because these structures are baked into these systems. It's systemic. And when you say systemic, that means that it's part and parcel of the operation of the system, of the operation of the apparatus, if you will. There is racism. There is abuse. There is criminality within the department, and that is structural, and that surpasses the individuals because it continues. When you have a club, or when you have a group or a gang or an organization, there are certain rules and traditions that pass on, even when the bad actors are gone. That's why one bad apple does spoil a whole bunch, because the tradition remains, the blue wall of silence, the turning the eye, the covering your partner's back, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm with you. Those things need to be addressed as far as if you're going to have an effective law enforcement organization that is interested in justice and helping the community. And if that's not addressed, then you can change the ingredients, but if you can change the recipe, but if the ingredients are bad, the cake's going to sink. You can change the people, but if the mechanisms that created the people, or if the mechanisms that created these circumstances aren't changed, doesn't matter. People are going to fall victim to the mechanisms. We got to change this. We got to restructure it. We got to tear it down. And that's not what's being addressed.
You're right on the money. That is the correct answer. No matter how this second trial goes, no matter whether they're convicted or acquitted or whatever it is, we still should be on point about the fact that, and you use the word systemic, it's systemic. How do you explain that you still have a cop on duty carrying a gun after 18 complaints having to do with use of force, having to do with breaching the rights of citizens? This is where it ought to naturally lead. How do you think that should be done? What is the mechanism to start moving in that direction?
Well, you've got the Attorney General's office. You've got, that's a start. You've got the you can have an independent prosecutor brought on by the federal government or even by the state, if they're so inclined, and if they're really legitimate and forthright in changing the policing system in that part of the country. You can bring on independent prosecutors. You can create a future civilian complaint review board with the power to indict, with the power to pull cops' records, with the power to subpoena. There are several ways you can create an independent police force. You can make the chief of police office an electable office, not decided by the mayor or by the city council. You can make the police accountable to the people in many different ways, and that's just a few of them.
Well, thank you. Thank you for getting us started in a powerful way today. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. That's the question we're dealing with. Okay, so they're going to trial, and we're all happy about that. We look forward to the substance of it, this trial coming up in August of these four police officers. But we have to look beyond that. Looking beyond that means what? What should the people be doing right now, preparing for that trial and preparing to make an impact because of the trial? 888-874-4888. You see, it's most people are going to be stuck at, quote, covering the news. Okay, we got it. The indictments were handed out on Friday. Okay, we get it. We know that it involves four officers, but they've been known. We've had stories written about that. Now comes at least a new timeline in August when this new trial is supposed to occur. Should we just stop and say, well, let's see what the trial brings? Or is there something that needs to be developing parallel to what is going on in, or what will be going on in, the court of law? If so, what is that? This is how you have to prepare. It's not enough to just talk about it and theorize about it. What real action could manifest itself by the time this second trial begins? What is on your mind as to, let's break the cycle. We sit and wait and we watch, and then we put 100% of our hopes on what the jury will decide. No, that's not activism. That's a kind of spectator sport. You're sitting there and you're looking at what is going on, but you're not part of the equation. How do the people place themselves into this equation as a force, pardon the pun, but as an added dimension and as an independent force for change? That's the question. See, I'm not asking you a simple question today. I don't ask simple questions anyway. But this is what needs to change. It's not, they already have their formula. They already know, well, you know, who we're going to call as witnesses, the documents we're going to submit, the questions we're going to ask, and legally, where are we going to go with the arguments? They know that. We do not know that. We do not know what we're doing or will do or how we can affect the outcome of this trial, the outcome of this case, the outcome of this issue. So right now, right this very minute, we're changing focus a bit and putting the light right in our eyes. what is it that we should be doing? And to what effect? 888-874-4888. Let's see how your brain is working today. Because it's not about what you think about the trial. What do you want to happen? Oh, these are silly questions. What I want to know is, what are you taking with you into this trial as an activist, as a person who believes that certain actions can bring about change? And you have until August to get that right, because you will not be able to affect anything much. You're working with a timetable you do not control right now, but in a sense you do. If the organization of your action is begun right now, anybody having any ideas about ways in which the people can prepare to exert some kind of influence in this trial and even after it? 888-874-4888. I'm asking you some tough questions today. No namby-pamby things. I'm asking you to account for yourself. I'm asking you to say, all right, this is part two. I wasn't there in part one, although I had ideas and I had opinions. But this is part two. This is where the rubber meets the road. Part one established the relationship between the cops' actions and the death, the horrible, painful death of George Floyd. Now comes the question, in fact, what are you going to do about it? I'm not getting any calls. I know it's intimidating to make oneself accountable, but that's exactly what I'm asking. What are you prepared to do? How is this trial going to shape or reshape your profile as a person who is interested in contributing to change, meaningful change? Or are we going to gather from now until the end of time talking about stuff that we are not doing? That's the question. I'm not going to prettify it. That's the question. What are you prepared to do to bring about this absolutely necessary change? What ideas do you have about what should be implemented? Because we now know what happened. We now know how it happened and why it happened. And we are going to get even more information on who is responsible. Okay, so now what happens after that? If we're not prepared to answer that question, we might as well fold up our tents and go away and stop annoying people with the false idea, the false claim that we are interested and that we are active in creating change. We might as well get it over with, call it a day, move on to something else. You see, we have to become real about what we believe. And how do we actualize those things that we believe? And this situation is so clear about what your choice ought to be. Your choice ought to be to do something concrete in the interest of justice. What does that mean to you? Really, if I were to ask you 2 days from now, what will your answer be? What are you prepared to do to ring that bell for justice and to say, not anymore on my watch, without protest, without public condemnation? I'm going to go on the record, and I am going to be an agent of change. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been thinking about this whole thing. And what comes up to me is we need a different system that does not let these types of things go on. And it might mean a new federal law. In this case, the state of Minnesota took action against these police officers. But there have been so many, many, many cases where the state has not indicted people who have done crimes like that, like, for example, in the Eric Garner case, and no federal action was taken. And in many other places, they failed to indict at the local level and got away with it. So we need a law. We need to change our operations. So there's no way that local crooked district attorneys and manipulative people can excuse or let people get away with this type of crime. In the case of Eric Garner, this guy killed Eric Garner and got away with it, and there were other police standing around, and as far as I know, no one went to trial about allowing this rogue policeman to kill Eric Garner. So we need laws, maybe at the federal level and at the state level, to anyone who's on the scene in a police capacity, allow someone to do what type of thing, should be charged. And during the Obama administration, I don't think anyone as in that administration did things that allowed people to get away with things that should not have been done. For example, the case of Trayvon Martin, it seemed to have ended with the six white women who excused Zimmerman from killing Trayvon Martin, calling it an act of self-defense when this man attacks someone and then gets away with killing him and saying it's self-defense. So we need federal law to step in here and not let anyone get away with going before a grand jury and the grand jury excusing that person. There should be further action taken in all of these types of cases, and there have been numerous cases like this throughout the United States. So we need to take action. We need to go out to the streets, whatever it takes to make the type of change and get the type of action that we want, and not let the rogue police forces get away with what they are doing.
Thank you. Thanks for your call and your contribution. Mohammed from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Professor.
Afternoon.
And as always, I sincerely hope your health continues to improve, and good afternoon to all my classmates. This is my perception, my ideas about the change. We're going to start, in my particular case, I am going to start with the young people. By that, I mean we're going to teach them first who they are. We're going to provide them with character building, leadership skills, and then grammar, because they're going to have to write. This particular system has to be deconstructed. I personally don't know how to do it.
If you don't mind my saying so, I'm not at all denigrating what you think you will want to do. But we have a case here and we have a timeline. And if we're going to do anything or get anything done, we have to recognize that there is a timeline. What in your mind can be achieved within that timeline?
To be honest with you, I don't fully understand what you're really asking. What do you mean?
They're coming to trial in August.
Okay.
So we don't have very much time to prepare anything or to think about what it is we can do in terms of change. However, it is set. It has been published. The timeline, and we don't set the timeline, but this case is coming up in August. What do you think should happen by August?
I just think this one of the things I think, and there are many more, I just think that we should all come together and demand justice, transparency, and justice in the case that these people be charged for the crimes they committed and be...
They have been charged already. We don't know that they will be convicted of those charges, but they have been charged. That's part of the indictment.
Okay. Well, we just need to unite and be behind all of our people and demand the justice that those Eric Garner deserves.
But what is then the definition of justice? Again, it should be very clear, because you would want to have that communicated by August.
Okay. Now, the crimes they committed, there are...
Allegedly committed.
There is punishment for it. And they need to pay the price for the crimes that they committed once convicted.
Okay.
From what
callers are saying, I mean, that's already on the books. That's already on the books. And we have the recent trial as an example that is a focus, and there has been some result with regard to that focus. Derek Chauvin dismissed from the force. All of the officers charged have been dismissed from the force. Chauvin has been convicted of crimes. He now wants a retrial. That's also part of the process. But
right.
We can point to movement because of public involvement. When this trial ends in August, by then, what are you hoping to see as an accomplishment?
That they reform, hold the police accountable, break up that system.
Yeah, we heard that. I don't mean to just push it aside, but we've heard these things before. Tell us in explicit terms what that means.
It means deconstruction and the public become involved, our communities. Like we were saying, someone said it before, I'll say it again. The police need to be from the particular community where they live, not people from outside. That's one way you can deal with it. Then they're accountable to the people in their particular community and neighborhoods. That's the way it really should be done. And another thing that could change that is, since you're going to need police under this particular system, because you have a level of unemployment, and people are going to take when they can't provide for themselves in an honest way. So in that, under this system, you need it. Now, you look at this system today, you got many people unemployed, can't pay their rent, but yet the price is rising on everything. So you got an uprising coming in the future in this particular country. You have an uprising. So it's going to have to be some reconstruction of this system. This system does not, it works for skills.
You're talking very, how should I say it? You're giving us conceptually. I want you to give us directives. What exactly needs to be done in your view?
Okay. In my particular view, we need to come together as a people and demand justice in the sense that employment be made available, the laws be observed and put into practice, and those who break them have to suffer the consequences of it. And we're talking about in a just way.
Okay, I don't think you hit the target today. But okay, if you wish, I mean, we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, because this is a very important discussion. Please check back with us. So you have overnight to ponder what you said today and see what you would want to offer as a solution.
Okay, I will do that. I will do that. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Thanks so much. Gerald from Florida, you're on the air.
You ask about what you can do. I think there's two things that anybody can do, and that is to contact your chief of police directly if you live in a town that's not too big, and discuss with him the issue of police brutality and tell him that you don't want that to happen, and ask him, you know, you can say whatever you want to say to him, but you got to contact him and make him know
or her
know that somebody cares. If something, that's to prevent something from happening. If something does happen, then you go to your political board, your mayor and council, or your county commission, or whatever it is, and protest it. And to physically make in person, make an appearance. And I think this is pretty effective from my personal experience. And that's all I really have to offer. I think that that people should become more active. Protesting and all that is, you can do that. I mean, that's not... that's not my approach. My approach is to go to the people in charge and let them know that you're dissatisfied with what's going on and you want them to ensure that it's not going to happen in your community. I can't control what goes on in New York City at all, but my little town that I live in, I have a voice. And that's about it.
All right. Thank you. Thanks
you're
for
welcome.
Contributing today. Gene from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Utrice, it occurs to me that there's something a little bigger in your question that we should take a closer look at. You know, every time a new appointment of a Supreme Court justice rolls around, there's a discussion about your judicial philosophy. How do you approach cases, and how will you approach cases when you're on the bench? And you hear these people talk about being an originalist. And it occurs to me that the Constitution was written to support the rights of property owners. And Black people under the Constitution are written as property or chattel, as it's written. And so under the Constitution, property does not have rights. The owners of the property have rights. And given that as a basis, we look at these issues where Black people are being gunned down in the streets and brutalized by police in cities and towns across the country, and there's never a change. Nothing happens, and we wonder why. We protest. We call our elected officials. We beg and plead. One officer may get convicted. Someone else has something to say, but largely nothing changes. And I suggest that that happens because we are still viewed under that originalist philosophy that says
okay, you're posing largely a theoretical or philosophical argument. I want you to get to the nitty-gritty. What this trial is coming up in August. It's a perfect time. We have enough time to formulate an approach. What do you suggest that approach be?
I hear you. And the short answer is I don't know, because we've had many, many, many very large, highly visible cases where we've had big protests, we've had strong voices, we've had boycotts, we've had all of these different types of actions. But at the end of the day, these things continue to happen. And so I'm really just trying to understand why we can't get a change. Because these people don't want to change it, regardless of the levels of protest that are out there. We don't see any...
Maybe they haven't seen a level of protest impressive enough yet. Maybe they think they're just talking, and we let them blow off a little steam, and then after the weekend we go back to business.
I think that's largely what has happened, and we've seen a countermeasure to that anyway. You know, we have seen the U.S. military giving surplus equipment to local police departments around the country to be used against the protesters, which they're using it. So I don't think that that's a concern. I really think that what we're seeing are larger and larger efforts and more sophisticated efforts to see to it that the levels of protest remain tamped down, quieted, and made sure that there will be very little, if any, organized resistance that is offered in such a way that could become effective.
But you know, you're answering your question and then again not. You're answering the question. What could be done? Well, in your words, I'm reinterpreting a little bit. Not very much is going to change. And we should expect that. Okay, got it. But does that mean we do not proceed? We do not express? We do not march? We do not... Does that mean that? Or does it mean that the change that we are asking others to make, we too must be prepared to make?
I agree with you that the change is necessary, and that the protest and the voicing of a request for change is necessary. I think the point that I'm really making is that the forces of power are not willing to change, regardless of the levels of protest that are arrayed against
them. When have forces of power been happy to oblige?
Never.
Okay, so that should be part of our operative knowledge. Powers, that's why they're powers. They intend to last a long time, and the formula that they are operating with is highly effective. There's no incentive to change anything. I'm asking the exact opposite. I happen to believe that is not a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think if people take things seriously enough, there can be change, and there will be change. But what will that change be? How do we construct it? How do we organize it? That's the question I'm really asking today.
Yeah, I hear you. I just history is not on our side. And I agree that that doesn't mean that you don't continue to struggle. You have to continue to struggle. But the how part is the difficulty in identifying, because the history is not on our side.
I don't agree with history not being on our side. I don't agree with that. All over the world, history is very much on our side. But what is also on our side is proof. You don't get these things that you want very easily. You have to organize, you have to persist, and you have to beat the system at its own game. It's happened in South Africa, it has happened in India, it's happened all throughout the colonial world. In Haiti, nobody in their right mind would have believed that Haitians could persist and win their cause. But they did.
So I'll leave you with one question.
Okay.
Is it reasonable for us under the guideline which you just laid out, is it reasonable for us to expect justice?
Yes. It is reasonable for everyone to expect justice. It is also reasonable to be prepared to work toward it and to be scientific about it and to be patient sometimes. It just because we employ a particular method or a particular strategy doesn't mean that it's going to work, but we at least have to start it.
The assumption is that it's a fair fight. And it's clear that the game
is rigged. No. How could it possibly be a fair fight?
Or a strike. But it should be a fair fight.
No, it shouldn't.
And it's clearly not.
It shouldn't be. It's not going to be a fair fight. Because that's why you have those who rule and those who are ruled. Those who rule make it an unfair fight. Because that's how it starts. They're not there fairly. They're not there justly. They're the rulers. From our point of view, you know, you ought to have a decent salary. You ought to have a decent place to live. Your children should go to decent schools. That is not their agenda. It never has been. It never will be. So there's no such thing as a fair fight.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All righty.
Thank you.
But I want you to think about this question, though, because let's say we're working with an August timeline here. By then, certainly we should have a more concrete idea of how do we make this change, this very necessary change. David called in and rattled off a whole list of people who have been killed and change, and people swore there would be change. No change. What is it that we have to do or stop doing in order to not just get attention, but to affirm our power as well? That's the ultimate question. Thanks so much for your contribution today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Everyone in the audience. Yes, it's hard Thank work you. That has to be done, and there are no easy solutions. However, we have the means at hand to do what's necessary. And I always go back to that amazing speech Adam Clayton Powell gave years ago. He said, let's call it what's in your hand. And what's been in our hand as people of color globally, but especially here in the United States, are our actual bodies. Massive peaceful protest is what is needed, and it's needed soon to descend upon Washington, D.C., and basically address this issue of police brutality and murders of people of color and people in generally in this country. And that's what's needed. And there's nothing short of that. But it's going to require mobilization and on a grassroots level to make that happen. And that is possible. But people need to get their faces out of their iPhones and out of America's Next this and that and all these things that are on TV and internet distracting us, and really get down to work. And otherwise, nothing will change. And as we speak, the powers that be are trying to undermine voting in this country in a very frightening level. And so people, you know, better wake up and wake up very, very quickly.
Amen. The church has just said amen. Thank you very much, Bill, for your contribution today.
You're welcome.
We are, whether you're aware of it or not, we are in a very significant moment in time and in history that will force us to face ourselves, our commitment to these ideals that we profess all the time about justice and equality and fairness and all of that stuff. Essentially, that part of it, the equation, has never changed. But we have seen, for the record, people who believe so strongly that they proceed with a conviction that is hard to beat. We believe this is what we are entitled to. We believe our children should go to good schools. We believe that everybody should have a decent job and should live in habitable housing. We believe that everybody is equal in this society. But that's our belief. If we believe in it and we see time and again a flouting, just a flagrant flouting of these beliefs, and we say this has to change, okay, well, that's the start, a recognition of a need for change. What is that change to be? How will it come about? What are you prepared to do to bring it about? That's where we're moving this week. That's the discussion all week this week. What are we prepared to do to make life better, more just, more equal? Thanks so much, everyone. I sincerely appreciate the effort, and I know you do too. So just think. That's one major revolutionary move right there. We stop thinking. And if all we achieve is that we turn the key in that ignition and get your thinking apparatus moving again, that's important. So I'm glad that we have so many teachers available to us who can advise, who can bring thoughts to our minds, who can encourage us, can forewarn us, because we know you have the best with regard to our intentions, our collective intentions. And this is going to be a major effort. When I say effort, the effort would be to bring people to a level of consciousness that these things don't exist in the abstract. These are not just ideas. These are things that are supposed to be reflections of how we want to live. Let's make it so. Let's join each other again tomorrow and continue the conversation. Bye-bye.